Hello, this is Mary Moreland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, October 29, 2020. Illinois impact. Pyatt mourns resident in 80s. Vermilion hospitalizations up. Douglas spike in cases continues. A man in his 80s became the first Pyatt County resident to lose his life to COVID-19. Of 102 counties, just 8 have yet to record a coronavirus-related death. Brown, Calhoun, Edwards, Hardin, Henderson, Johnson, Putnam, and Scott. For the second time in as many days, the number of Vermilion County residents hospitalized with the coronavirus grew by 2 to 18. Champaign County's count also increased by 2 Wednesday to 6. After 3 days of data was logged, Champaign County has 437 active cases, the most by zip code. 61820, Champaign 101 plus 39. 61866, Rantoul 80 plus 15. 61821, Champaign 55 plus 21. 61822, Champaign 38 plus 11. With another 26 added Wednesday, 374 of Douglas County's 779 confirmed cases have come in the last 14 days, leaving the health department to monitor 673 residents with active cases on their close contacts. For the 18th time in 21 days, Illinois' 7-day positivity rate rose 6.4 to 6.7%, but it's still higher in neighboring states. Wisconsin 28.0, Iowa 26.4, Missouri 9.2, Kentucky 8.8, and Indiana 7.8. Court date. A day after the governor poo-pooed the idea, the IHSA gave the green light to a high school basketball season beginning in November. That doesn't assure CU of hosting the state finals in 2021. Game on. IHSA defies Pritzker IDPH guidelines with plans to have season starting next month. It's a big deal to say to government officials we're going to go in a different direction. The IHSA possessed control of its return to play guidelines from their early June publication until July 14th. On that date, the IHSA began deferring to Governor J.B. Pritzker and the Illinois Department of Public Health concerning changes to those guidelines amid the COVID-19 pandemic. And that remained the status quo for more than 3 months. Not anymore. The IHSA Board of Directors on Wednesday voted to break away from the Pritzker IDPH contingent on the topic of basketball, opting to stick with the previously announced schedule of having the season take place November 16th through February 13th. Instead of delaying practices and games, as Pritzker indicated he hoped would happen earlier this week. The decision of whether teams will play is being left in the hands of each individual IHSA member school's officials, so long as programs follow guidelines put forth by the IHSA Sports Medicine Advisory Committee. To me, it's a big deal to say to government officials or a Department of Public Health, we're going to go in a different direction than how you're advising. Anderson said Wednesday afternoon, I'm cautiously optimistic we'll proceed with whatever hurdles we have to travel to accomplish a season this winter. The board's choice arrived the day after Pritzker announced Tuesday afternoon at a press conference that basketball was being shifted from a medium risk to a higher risk sport in the IDPH guidelines. That guidance prohibits players from doing more than participating in non-contact workouts. This came after Anderson said the IHSA had conversations last Friday with IDPH Director Dr. Noki Azike and Deputy Governor Jesse Ruiz. They really were, I felt, on a fact-finding mission relating to our guidelines, Anderson said. They asked a lot of good questions about how we thought we could move forward and really listened. I wasn't expecting them to make, in my opinion, that drastic a move. Pritzker said in a Tuesday afternoon statement that nothing is canceled, just put on hold until we're through the thick of this pandemic. We know this virus is of most concern when people are indoors with high contact, especially in vigorous situations that bring about heavy breathing like in wrestling, hockey, and basketball. Instead of aligning with that position, the IHSA board turned to direction from its own Sports Medicine Advisory Committee. We've throughout the fall tried to be good partners. We've leaned on the IDPH and the governor's office for their guidance in how we'd move forward, Anderson said. At this point, without basketball in the winter, we were going to have a really big hole in our winter season with limited activities for kids. So in terms of the safety, I think the guidelines put together by our Sports Medicine Advisory Committee really lend themselves to making competition safe for students. Board decision. The IHSA board, in a Wednesday press release, pointed to our students regularly leaving the state to play sports or covertly continuing to play locally as another reason why the IHSA is splitting from state officials on whether basketball can be played this winter. This had kind of been building with our board, and a number of them were hearing from other members' schools saying, "This is hurting kids," Anderson said. This was our board's recognition of, we've reached a point where we really need to do something that is student-centered and get these students back competing, and in their opinion, we can do it safely. During his Wednesday press conference, Pritzker briefly addressed the IHSA's board decision, saying he prefers to err on the side of health and safety in his difference of opinion. "We've told school districts what the rules are, and I think they all know," Pritzker said. "It's unfortunate, but we would probably be taking on legal liability if they went ahead and moved beyond what the state has set as the mitigation standard." Anderson said he asked Ruiz about potential litigation issues schools could face should they opt to play basketball and therefore go against IDPH rules. He indicated that there could be some ramifications from the Illinois State Board of Education for our public schools, and that there could be ramifications from DCEO, Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity, for our private schools if they go forward against the guidance, Anderson said. The legal question remains in the unknown. I didn't resource any of our legal counsel related to this because, honestly, when we went into the meeting, I was really unsure of where our board was going to go with their decision-making. I think the board just thought, well, those are going to have to be decisions that our local districts will determine. Dr. Carmen I. Ayala, Illinois State Superintendent of Education, released a statement Wednesday evening in which she urged schools to prioritize health and safety. Public health experts have determined that basketball poses a high risk of COVID-19 transmission and is not currently safe to play, Ayala said. Defying the state's public health guidance opens schools up to liability and other ramifications that may negatively impact school communities. Complete safety guidelines for all winter sports will be released publicly on Thursday, according to Anderson. Among the IHSA Sports Medicine Advisory Committee provided mitigations are all individuals associated with the game, including players wearing a mask as well as social distancing on benches. Anderson said each quarter of a game will include a built-in break separate from timeouts, during which players can come to the sideline and catch their breath. The IHSA will continue to abide by the IDPH's gathering of no more than 50 people for indoor events, likely ruling out fan attendance at games. "The spectator piece is something that I think the board will visit again in November," Anderson said. A big basketball-related question for those in Champaign-Urbana, now that the IHSA is allowing basketball to take place, is whether the boys' state tournament will be part of this season. In June, Champaign won a bid for a 3-year contract to host the state tournament again at the State Farm Center starting in March 2021. The IHSA held regional and sectional events for its fall sports, but canceled all state tournaments and state meets. "We really haven't had time, now that the board took the action Wednesday, to really consider what a state series might look like. Ultimately, that'll be a board decision like it was for the fall." Anderson said, "At this point, I don't anticipate us culminating with a state championship in many of our winter sports." The matter of what happens to basketball games if a player or coach tests positive for COVID-19 is still unclear, Anderson said. The IHSA will not set a concrete policy of whether to postpone or cancel games if the situation arises. We'll lean on local health departments and schools to make that determination, Anderson said. They're the best boots on the ground to determine what's safe for their students. Other states' high school sports organizations found themselves in situations where teams had to take a break for a period of time and then resume later this fall. I could see that playing out. Anderson also said that a lack of COVID-19 spikes during the IHSA's fall contact days, which conclude Saturday, makes them feel more comfortable sending basketball players on the court for games. Data compiled by the Illinois Basketball Coaches Association from 797 of the state's coaches meshes with this stance. According to an IBCA study, which was publicly distributed early this month, 69% of coaches questioned are using their fall contact days and 9% reported COVID-19 cases within a program. Two coaches reported positive tests totals equals two individuals. That part I feel relatively confident in, said Anderson, who has a high school-aged basketball-playing son. While maybe we don't have the testing that the Big Ten Conference might have, when they're playing basketball, I think the self-monitoring that we've instituted and are asking our schools to do, in addition to the other protocols and guidelines that we have put in place, really lent ourselves to conducting basketball safely. CU region on brink of increased restrictions. More restrictions on local businesses and gatherings sizes could be looming if a surge of new COVID-19 cases in the 21-county East Central Illinois region continues. Latest data from the Illinois Department of Public Health shows the region inching closer to trigger points that could bring new restrictions intended to slow down the spread of coronavirus. I don't think it's inevitable, said Champaign-Urbana Public Health District Administrator Julie Pride. But unfortunately, Champaign County is tied to all those counties around us, and a lot of their health departments have no support from their elected officials or anyone. And the numbers are running up, the numbers are getting higher, and the hospitals are filling up. According to the latest state data, the state's 21-county Region 6 has a 7-day positivity rate in the 7% range since mid-October, and the rate has risen to 7.9% this past Saturday and 8.1% Sunday. Three consecutive days of average positivity rates that are 8% or higher could trigger additional restrictions on a multi-county region. Another trigger is a sustained 7 out of 10 days increase in the positivity rate, plus either a sustained increase in hospital admissions for COVID-19-like illness or a reduction in capacity threatening hospitals' ability to handle a surge. Among the many new restrictions the state could impose are 11 p.m. bar and restaurant closings, no indoor service at bars and restaurants, and further restrictions on gathering sizes. Other tiers of restrictions could include reducing and eventually suspending elective medical procedures, suspending in-person shopping at non-essential retail, and suspending salon and personal care services, according to the state's mitigation plan. Carl Foundation Hospital hasn't reached the point of a critical bed shortage, according to spokeswoman Carolyn Gordon. While it is common to see an increase of patient volumes in the fall, we are not experiencing critical bed capacity at this time, she said. We constantly monitor our space to provide care. We have the ability to expand overall bed capacity and intensive care unit capacity within our Urbana Hospital and among our hospitals in the region. Pride said most people in Champaign County are doing an amazing job at taking the basic protective steps, such as wearing masks, washing hands, and maintaining physical distances from others. But we definitely are not doing everything we can right now. Cases are rising and large gatherings are being planned that public health will not hesitate to shut down or take immediate steps to reduce the crowd size, she said. If you are planning a wedding with 250 people, we're going to show up and say everybody out but the 50 people, she warned. Most event venues are cooperating with public health, Pride said, and those that don't can face the wrath of their customers if the events are shut down. Fortunately, there's not a lot of science denial in Champaign County, Pride said, but she still sees some people making the pandemic a political issue and undermining the reality. Pride also said she's worried areas that aren't doing well controlling new cases are going to have more outbreaks that will impact sick and older people, especially as the weather continues to get colder, driving people indoors. We're going into the winter months with with way too many cases, she said. Certainly the possibility of more restrictions is a concern, said John Manzella, owner of Manzella's Italian Patio in Champaign. But Manzella's is also in the fortunate position of being a long-established restaurant with an established clientele, he said, and it's been doing fairly well with curbside pickup and delivery and using the level of indoor seating that's permitted. We will do better than some of the places that have never done that, but obviously it's going to hurt everybody's bottom line, he said. Cassidy Hoke, managing partner at Biagi's Ristorante Italiano in Champaign, said she was feeling hopeful. The restaurant's level of carryout sales have shifted from 10% pre-pandemic to 40 to 50% since the pandemic began, she said. I'm optimistic about not closing, and when we want very much to continue serving our dine-in guests, that we have pivoted before to just curbside, and we were successful, and we will be successful if that is what we're told to do, she said. Biagi's has kept its outdoor tables in place since the cold weather arrived and added an outdoor heater, she said. There's not much demand for outdoor seating these days, she said, but those tables are being kept in place for warmer days. Don Elmore, director of the Small Business Development Center at Champaign County Economic Development Corporation, said it would be challenging if restrictions reverted to those imposed at the beginning of the pandemic. But for those who want to view the current situation in a more optimistic light, he said, businesses have had to adjust to restrictions before. And he said it's likely some of the changes businesses have already made won't go away after the pandemic ends. I've been really heartened by businesses' willingness to not say, woe is me, but what can we do, he said. Ask the administrator a daily question for Champaign-Urbana Public Health District's Julie Pride. I travel to Mexico frequently. Almost every store in every town, before taking your temperature, makes you step on a pad with standing liquid water, then on a drawing pad before entering their establishment. What is this for, and why do we not do this in America? These are disinfecting footbeds. The goal is to prevent pathogens from entering a facility. These are frequently used in food production facilities and agricultural operations. It is unclear to me why a store would use these unless there is a food product on the floor, live animals, or some reason why customers would be on the floor. Visit Champaign County. Champaign discussing Black Heritage Project. What started as a proposal for a Black History mural could one day be a series of murals recognizing local Black history. Visit Champaign County is helping organize the Heritage Trail, which is in the planning stages and is in discussion with 40 North, the Champaign Park District, city officials, the Black Chamber of Commerce, Buy Black Champaign, Cranford Art Center, and local activists, according to VCC's quarterly report. At Tuesday's Champaign City Council meeting about a Black Lives Matter street mural, council members said they'd first like to hear about the Black History Mural Project at their November 17th meeting with Visit Champaign County. It's very exciting, said Jane DeLuce, the CEO of the Tourism Bureau. It's a wonderful way to showcase the rich history and culture we have in this community. She said there's still a lot of moving parts, but there will likely be several murals highlighting different aspects of significant Black history milestones in Champaign County. It stemmed from a discussion about creating one Black history mural, but organizers realized they couldn't include everything they wanted to in one mural, DeLuce said. She said they're still identifying which milestones to include and are studying how other cities have put together similar heritage trails. They're also still identifying where the murals will be located. We want long-term building locations, DeLuce said. The Heritage Trail could also include historic churches and markers, DeLuce said. As for how to pay for it, she said Visit Champaign County would look for private funding as well as grant opportunities. At Tuesday's council meeting, members were excited about the project. I love, 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 love the African American Historic Mural Projects, Councilman Greg Stock said. This is a great opportunity. If we can support that in some way, either financially or by lending space for perhaps a location for a mural or murals. I think this is a great opportunity to really educate the entire community about achievement contributions of African Americans. Stock and Councilwoman Clarissa Nickerson Foreman compared the project to the mural in North Champaign created in 1978 by Angela Rivers. Stock called it a focal point for that neighborhood for many years. "I am the little girl who saw the mural at 4th and 5th Street," Foreman said. "It's something that was impactful." And while Foreman expects the Heritage Walk to be impactful, she said there's still more to be done. "Our work isn't going to stop at the Heritage Walk," she said. Top of the morning, something to get you started today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. Judah Christian Principal Jim Moxley was kind enough to open his school's gym for us Wednesday afternoon so we could illustrate today's A1. We went there, however, thinking the season would be canceled, taking several photos of a darkened gym to fit what would be the IHSA's gloomy decision. Minutes later came the head-turning news there would be a high school basketball season after all, practices starting in November. "A glimmer of hope," Jane DeLuce said. "A major player in CU winning back the IHSA boys basketball finals. The Visit Champaign County CEO, of course, wants the chance to host in 2021. Wednesday's vote kept the dream alive, although keep in mind for the fall sports that were played, what they didn't do is to have a state series, DeLuce said. "If the tournament doesn't play out at State Farm Center until 2022, it won't cost CU a year on its contract as host. Just like all our events," DeLuce said, "we will be ready to host state basketball when it happens." And there's a picture of Schlarman's Jamal Taylor Jr., who was one of more than 100 area high school basketball players who attended our photo shoot October 18th in Champaign. Those photos will be online soon now that the IHSA has given the season the go-ahead. Teacher of the Week, Gail Lewis, Edison Elementary School, Danville, 4th grade. "Small impacts are the ones I treasure." In her 22 years of teaching in Danville, Gail Lewis has taught 4 grades, has worked in administration, and worked 3 different jobs. While nothing has prepared her for this year, her passion for instilling a love for reading or teaching students about the next wave of STEM innovation hasn't waned. Lewis's work ethic hasn't only benefited her students. She also trained the Edison staff and other district employees on how to use Google Classroom while preparing for a unique school year. "I find my work important because the impacts a teacher makes on students will last a lifetime. I am always striving to make those impacts positive. I am passionate about math, science, and technology because I was influenced by my parents. My dad was an engineer and CAD designer. When we were young, my parents knew computers were the future and made sure we were learning about them in schools. These fields are constantly changing in the world around us, and students need to stay proficient. My favorite, most unique lesson that I teach is I love to take our reading lessons to the next level, incorporating a science or art lesson with them. I am happiest when we are building volcanoes, painting an election poster, or dropping parachutes we build from the stairs to see which floats the longest. My most fulfilling moment on the job was, most recently, teaching a student come from out of town who rarely came to school and barely reading. She has flourished into a reader with a book all the time and rarely missing school. Those small impacts are the ones I treasure. Something else I'm passionate about is never giving up on kids. I have seen so many kids that are low in academics or motivation change their course. I strive to find what makes them happy and build on it. Integrating those pieces into lessons can change a student's learning. My favorite teacher and subject to study in school was Mrs. Nagel at Holy Family School, has stayed with me throughout life. She was a great influence in my love for school. As a teacher, I have been most influenced by Mrs. Brandenberger from Cannon Mead Park. She was instrumental in helping me grow as I watched her teach kids to read. She taught so many struggling readers to read. I created my never give up attitude. I engage students during this strange time by laughter and talking. I take time to get to know the kids even through a screen. During breaks, kids ask me questions and I ask them. We make mistakes, talk about funny things, and build relationships with each other. If I weren't a teacher, I would be. I love architecture, decorating homes, or maybe a stay-at-home mom. I love being with my own kids, too. This is a hard one. I started teaching the neighborhood kids when I was little, so I've never really thought past that. Program offers free couples help. COVID-19 increasing stress on relationships. Has pandemic-related stress turned you and your spouse into the Bickersons? All that added stress from COVID-19 could take a toll on a relationship, and some couples were already under stress before the pandemic began, said Alan Barton, a University of Illinois Human Development and Family Studies professor who is heading a new project called Illinois Strong Couples. It's very easy to drift in relationships, he said. There can be a big event when a blow-up happens, but there was a momentum leading to that. Barton said Illinois Strong Couples, a free relationship strengthening program, can help couples weather the COVID-19 storm and be prepared to better handle future relationship stressors. It includes 6 online lessons couples can do at their own pace, in their own home, and 5 video conferences with trained coaches to lend support, review the materials, and do some practice on what's been discussed. This isn't personalized marriage counseling, mind you. It's not therapy at all, Barton said. It's an education program dealing with issues all couples face, regardless of age and what stage the relationship is in. Whether it be young adults contemplating marriage, older couples with children, or empty nesters suddenly wondering if the marriage is worth continuing, he said. Illinois Strong Couples uses a studied and science-based marriage strengthening program in an online form called ePrep. Stress in general is bad for relationships, Barton said, and the pandemic has piled on more stress from such things as financial problems, educating the children at home, working from home, and loss of social connections. Those external stressors can lead to internal stress on a relationship. For example, things that are later regretted and ways of interacting that add strain and don't promote feelings of safety within the relationships, he said. Illinois Strong Couples focuses on physical safety, emotional safety, knowing you are loved for yourself, and commitment safety, the knowledge that you're in it together and have a future, Barton said. Often when things start to get hard in a marriage, it becomes easier to view your partner more as an opponent, not your teammate, he said. The program's aim, Barton said, is for couples to view themselves as a team. It helps both of you become a better teammate, he said. Barton said he's well aware there are going to be couples in which one person is less interested in trying this program than the other. But once partners go through the program, they start to see value in it, he said. Keep in mind, many couples wind up turning to therapy only after the relationship is in bad shape and lacking feelings of safety and connection, Barton said. He keeps a relationship education program like Illinois Strong Couples are low investment for a potentially high return. For anyone signing up, be prepared to invest some effort. We are teaching proven things that apply to relationships, and it's the couple's job to take that and run with it, he said. And just as in parenting, results aren't immediate. Over time you can grow apart, and over time you can gradually start to connect again, Barton said. This has been Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, October 29th, 2020. Please stay tuned for Part 2.